Hi, everybody. Just got a few minutes to take questions. Hit me with a why if you have trouble with small talk. If I have a little trouble with small talk, I have this gravity well that just takes me down to deeper topics. I mean, more important topics, more valuable topics, more relevant topics. I here's a word I hate. I hate the word fritter. Now, fritters, form of donut I used to enjoy, plus non-fritters, no. By the way, it's going to be a donor-only thing because, just thanks everyone so much for your support. So let me just flip that right now. If you want to get a question in before it goes donor, if you're not a donor, that's fine. But yeah, frittering, the idea of frittering, wasting your life away. It's wild. Plus now turning 56, almost 57, I now have to shave my earlobes because apparently hair follicles have just been lying in wait for me to start pushing 60 and then it's like, sprout! Why? What is the point? Is this going to help me hear? Does this help me detect wind? I don't know. But hey, I give good ear. Look at that. They're not too out. In fact, sometimes I just look like the child's drawing of the head when they forget to put the ears in. So, all right. So somebody had a question here. I asked these questions a little while ago, about a week ago, so I'm getting to them. Hi, Steph. I really appreciate you taking questions like this. My question is, how can I become more confident in making small talk, as well as giving and receiving basic greetings? I often feel like I mumble and don't make very good eye contact during these more casual parts of social discourse. In things like formal interviews and events I can do just fine, I come across very well. However, in everyday situations, like seeing people at tills or work, etc., I usually revert back to a less confident and more closed-off personality. I can speak well, but in these situations, I often don't. Maybe this is something to do with how my mother would incessantly critique me about these things as a kid. She basically made me memorize certain things, which I still instinctively repeat to this day. Whenever I have to say hello to someone in a casual work setting, such as when entering the room where my coworkers are, I feel like I can't express myself and instead just become closed off, disinterested, and inauthentic. Sorry for the long question. Look at that. He's so shy that he's apologizing for a long question. Well, Scott Adams had a pretty funny Dilbert many years ago where it's like two coworkers recognize each other at the end of a long hallway. And what do? How do you fill that time when you're going through the hallway? So the problem here, in my humble opinion, my friend, the problem here is you're just not angry. Rage is always the solution. You're just not angry. So when people criticize you, either they're right or they're assholes. Can we kind of agree with that? Like, if people criticize you, either they have a point, which you kind of want to listen to, or they're assholes. Now, quick question for those of you who are on the sudden drop by. What percentage of people who criticize you are in fact assholes? Not just online, but all the criticism you've received in your life. What percentage of people who criticize you are in fact assholes? 99%. Well, certainly if you count online, absolutely. If you count online, absolutely. This is your question. Look at that timing, 50%. Wow, 50%. You've got some really reliable people in your circle. Good for you. Most, almost all, right? So let me ask you this. Do you have a barrier to people who criticize you? Do you have a barrier? Do you have a credibility? Do you have a high wall? Do you have an audition? Like, think of this as an audition. Everybody wants to play the lead in the movie, but hey, man, I've produced my own plays. I've been a producer for short films, one of which I wrote. You audition people, right? You do an audition. I was reading about how the Blair Witch Project, the audition process was, okay, pretend you've been a prisoner for 20 years in prison. We're the parole board. You've got to convince us to let you out. And the woman who got the part was spent, 10 minutes convincing them that they should never let her out of prison, right? So that was her sort of audition, and she got the part. It's a messed up movie-making process, but it did produce a very vivid film. So if people want to criticize me, fantastic, right? First of all, they're not really... Anybody who criticizes you, irrelevant, unimportant, boring, wasteful, who cares, idiot, jerk, bye-bye. I have this, like, I don't care about anyone who criticizes me. Do you know what that means? Do you know why I say that? Just, because we're philosophers here, right? Do you know why? I don't care if anybody criticizes me. Do you know why? It's important, right? People are always going to criticize you. No, not that it's a waste of time. It's just that there's nothing, criticizing me is an ad hominem by definition, right? So if somebody comes up to you with a math equation they think they've solved and you say you have pimples, that has no bearing on the math equation, right? You're criticizing what them, their hygiene or whatever. It's no appearance. It has no relevance to the math equation. So when I'm, particularly when I'm out there in public, right, I'm making arguments, or I guess I used to be more out in public, I'm making arguments and questions and comments and issues, and people would criticize me. Like, you're just a racist, you're some phobe, or like some nonsense, right? That it's completely irrelevant. It's completely boring. And you know, there's so many people just voting themselves out of the room in my brain. Yeah, I'm talking about when I was more prominent on social media. There's no argument. If people, like, you, there's no point criticizing people because you really can't. Like, if somebody says, I want to quit drinking, and you say, if they keep drinking, you say, didn't you want to quit drinking? You know, maybe I can help you with that if you care about the person. But you're not criticizing the person. You're criticizing their relationship to a statement, right? You don't criticize individuals, qua individuals. What's the point? It's like criticizing someone's taste in music, right? So, or their favorite color. So there's no point criticizing anyone. What you do is you criticize the gap between what they say and what they do. And what you do and what you say. Do you know the difference? So you're criticizing, like your GPS criticizes you. If you take the wrong turn, it says recalculating, in a sense, right? So it says you want to get to this destination. You've taken a wrong turn. So criticizing an individual is an automatic ejection from the conversation, in my mind. Like, I don't even look twice. I don't even think about it. I don't engage with it. I just don't look twice, right? So to criticize me is to help me, right? I mean, when if I take a wrong turn and my GPS says, recalculating, take this, you know, take this road now instead to get back to where you want. I mean, the GPS is not criticizing me. It's not saying, I can't believe you did another left turn. I told you clearly to just bear left, not turn left, whatever, right? GPS is not criticizing me, right? We understand that, right? The GPS is helping me because I have a goal. I want to get to place X. I want to get to place X, and if I'm going about it in the wrong direction, if I'm doing something wrong, if then they're not criticizing me, they're helping me. They're helping me. And I appreciate help. I really do. I mean, if I say something's true, if I say something is true, and it turns out I'm wrong, people who are correcting me are helping me because my goal is to get to the truth. And if I say something that's incorrect, right, like I just did a show this morning with my daughter, and I'm doing a call-in right after this. I got about a half hour. I did a show with my daughter this morning where we were reading about the Dunning-Kruger effect, you know, that less intelligent people tend to think other things are easy. You can't judge the skill of competent people. Like, you and I probably can't figure out if somebody's doing a good appendectomy or not. That they've tried to replicate that, and they really can't find much of a measurement at all. So maybe. Maybe it's completely or relatively false phenomenon. The replication crisis in science is massive. Like 50% of papers that are tested in psychology are complete nonsense. I think it's a third of cancer studies. Like, it's just insane. The peer review process is unutterably broken and is getting millions of people killed, by the way. But who cares? You've got tenure, right? Who gives a shit, right? So, are they government funded? Well, yeah, of course they are. So somebody who criticizes me, like I used to when I was on Twitter, like I'd get all these people who'd be like, well, you really need to take this tone or do that or approach it in this way. It's alienating, it's off-putting and so on. And I'd look at them and they'd have like 38 followers, right? I'd be like, okay, so like you have no credibility. I mean, somebody with 5 million followers, yeah, you know, I'll listen. I talked to people back in the day when I was big on social media. Yeah, I talked to people and I took advice. And I remember one guy saying, you know, you could be more, what was the word he used? It was actually a very good word. Aspirational. You could be more aspirational and less critical. I thought it's very good feedback. Very good feedback. So I always appreciated that. So I don't, the people who wrote the Dunning-Kruger effect ironically acted out the Dunning-Kruger effect in a way. Yeah, for sure. Thank you for the tip. I will get to your question. It's a great question. So if your mom was hypercritical of you as a kid, do this, don't do that. And look, moms enforce this hysterical politeness way more than dads do, right? Dads think it's funny if you call someone who's fat, moms are just mortified and cringe, mortification, shame, all of this kind of crap, right? I mean, it's not crap as a whole, but it's crap with regards to sort of the male perspective. So if someone's trying to help you in a destination, fantastic. If your mom's just criticizing you because she's anxious and she doesn't want to be judged badly, then she's sacrificing your masculinity for the sake of her hysteria. I mean, as a boy, I assume you're a boy, right? That's child sacrifice. That's child sacrifice. She tried, and to some degree succeeded, at least so far, in crippling your social confidence because she was anxious, right? Listen, I'm a peaceful parent, right? And my daughter will occasionally, or not so much now, but in the past, she would say stuff, and it'd be a little bit like, you know, right? I mean, right? So, but if it's not putting her in danger, then, I mean, it's not her job to manage my emotions, right? You understand this is fundamentally not a child's job to manage their parents' emotions. It's not a child's job to manage the parents' emotions. Hit me with a why if you had to manage your parents' emotions. Yes, I will put a why in right away, right? Hit me with a why if you had to manage your parents' emotions. They get upset, you have to change. Right. And that's a brain-dead course of action on the part of the parents. Yeah, you guys aren't responsible for managing my emotions. You're not responsible for managing anyone's emotions. It's their job to manage their emotions themselves. And you see, people who can't manage their own emotions become tyrannical. Tyranny is when you cannot manage your own emotions. They're overwhelming, and therefore you need to clamp down and destroy other people's freedom of choice because you can't handle your own emotions. If you're ashamed and embarrassed of being fat and some little kid points at you and says, "Why are you so fat?" And you can't handle the shame. You can't, like, they spill over. They feel like they're going to overwhelm you. Overwhelmed, right? Then you're going to, "You can't say that," right? Right. When people say, "You can't say that," what they're really saying is, "I can't feel that. I can't handle feeling that." Right? This is like censorship. I mean, sometimes it's about sort of straight up power, right? But when people say, "You can't say that," they're saying, "When you say that, my feelings overwhelm me." To which the proper response is, well, deal with your feelings. Like, grow up. Deal with your feelings. Learn to deal with your feelings and stop trying to tyrannize other people because you can't manage your own emotions. The other thing which you can say too, you know, the average, you know, like a quarter of people who get a university degree have IQs of 90 or below, right? And, you know, it used to be only the top 10% of people went to university at all, right? So, you know, sometimes, I mean, how do you deal with that? I mean, how do you deal with that? So, some people, it's just not your place. It's not your thing, right? If you faint at the sight of blood, don't be a surgeon, right? If you're creeped out by dead bodies, don't be a mortician. If you don't want to cut into people, right, then don't do autopsies. You know, if you're revolted by human butts, maybe don't be a proctologist. Like, just fine. There's lots of things that are not for me. I mean, most things are not for me. Most things are not for you. This is for me, and some people don't like this, and... right? It's, you know, if somebody says in this intellectual discussion, "I'm overwhelmed by my emotions," and, you know, I sympathize with that. I understand that. I mean, whatever, right? I mean, if I were to, I don't know, I mean, whatever, maybe I'm not cut out to be a surgeon, right, or whatever, right? So if I were to study surgery, maybe I'd be overwhelmed, maybe I'd just pass out or faint, or like I just can't handle it, I'm over-empathetic or something like that, right? Okay, so then I shouldn't be a surgeon, right? Isn't that the deal? That's the deal, isn't it? Shouldn't be a surgeon. So if you're overwhelmed and your emotions tsunami out your personality and you just, right, then... okay, so then intellectual discussions are not the thing for you, right? Any more than if you faint at the sight of the blood, medical school probably ain't the place for you. It's, but of course, you know, we've got to accommodate everyone because everyone's the same, right? Everyone's this sort of modern spacesuit, Buck Rogers silver jumpsuit nonsense, right? Everyone's the same, so we've got to accommodate everyone. But we used to have this thing, right? We used to have this thing, like, I have, over the course of my life, like a minor issue with tendons, right? My tendons tend to be a smidge delicate. So basically what happened was my tendons are for a shorter person, a smaller person, but my bones are for a larger person, right? So I'm a shade under 6 foot. And so, you know, taller than average, but I've never been able to touch my toes. People say, oh, just stretch. It's like, no. Stretching doesn't change the length of your ligaments, for God's sakes. It doesn't change the length of your tendons. It's just so annoying. You know, it was so annoying when people were like, oh, I'm totally flexible. So, well, I'm not flexible. Oh, you should just stretch more. It's like, oh, that's such a lie. I mean, I actually did stretching in theater school. I did Tai Chi in theater school. I did yoga for many years. So I've done my share of stretching. I stretch actually every day, both for exercise and for not getting jimmy legs from my hamstrings when I go to bed. I just have short tendons. And when I was a kid, I had to take these very cold baths because I had this thing called lumbago, I think it's called, where your tendons are shorter. And as your bones grow, your tendons don't grow with them, or they get stretched because, you know, there's a slight mismatch, right? I mean, my father's Irish, my mother's German, so there's a fairly wide gene pool there. And I guess I got a short person's ligaments and a tall person's bone structure, right? And no, it's not a huge issue in my life. I'm just sort of pointing it out for the sake of clarity. So because I have short ligaments, dance is not for me. Like, being a dancer is not for me. Being a gymnast is not for me. I have to watch how much I exercise because I can very easily pull a tendon. And, you know, I had a tendon on my back that got crystallized, like it got a little torn, and then the scar tissue and all of that. And it took years to kind of get that back to normal. So, yeah, just if people are overwhelmed by intellectual conversations, then don't do it, right? You know, if you have a desperate fear of deep water, maybe don't be a pearl diver. Are these also known as growing pains as teens? I don't know. I mean, probably, yeah. But, I think for the tendons and the bones to be perfectly matched, maybe a little less common than we think. I don't know how many people get this kind of stuff. But, yeah, I was pretty uncomfortable as a teenager as far as that went. With regards to small talk, your mom kind of crippled you for the sake of her own anxiety, and you, as a man or as a woman, particularly as a man, just get mad at it. It's like, why the hell did I have to bottle myself up because you got anxious, right? You know, like if a mom is like, don't ride your bike hands-free, right? Do you know what because, you know, moms are pretty nervous about people getting injured, and I understand that. I really do. I understand that. Because moms are the ones who usually have to take care of the injuries. And also, if your kid gets injured, sometimes you're looked badly as a mom if your kids get injured, right? So moms are like, well, don't write hands-free, right? And do you know what the answer is to that? What the father's answer is to that? What do the dads say? What should the dad say if the kid's doing something dangerous? It's usually the son. If the son's doing something dangerous and the mom's freaking out, what should the mom say? Pain is nature's teacher. Sorry, I just had to type something. He'll be okay. Nope, none of that. Oh my gosh. Father-free households, right? No, so if the mom can't handle watching the son do something dangerous, the dad says, don't watch, don't look, go inside. You can't manage that. That's her instinctual, natural, protect the infant response, right? You don't try and manage that, right? I mean, you can't change her. So if you can't stand looking at something and that something is important, don't look, right? Don't look. I mean, isn't this why if you want to lose weight, don't have sugary, fatty snacks in your house? Just because they're always in front of you and they're available, right? No, see, you don't try and change women into, right, the female. You don't try and change female nature. Because that's saying male nature is innately better and female nature, that's not true. Male nature is beautiful and powerful, and female nature is beautiful and powerful, just not, you know, and there's a lot of overlap, but there are some gaps, right? Sorry, I did that wrong. Wait, did I do that? Yeah, it's a lot of overlap. lot of overlap. Yeah, a lot of overlap, but some gaps. So your mom crippled your social skills for the sake of her own anxieties, and you should be angry about that. You should be angry about that. She sacrificed your comfort, your future, your success, your confidence, your comfort, your income, your facility with women. She crippled all of that. I'm not saying you're crippled. I'm just saying, right? It's something to get angry at. Something to get angry at. All right. What is the deal with aggressive old men lately? They have been complete strangers that when we get into an argument, we'll jump straight to raising their voices, sometimes even making tough guy threats. It feels like when women got aggressive, knowing there's a social stigma about responding in kind to them. I've noticed this a little bit. So the old men of our society have consciences from hell. Right? The old men of our society have hell-sent, hell-spawned, hell-maintained furnaces of conscience. Right? Why? Tell me why old men are guilty. You inherit a culture. You inherit an economy. You inherit a country. What are you supposed to do with that? What are you supposed to do with that country? Keep it good, be a good steward. Yeah. No. No, you're supposed to make it better. Protect and defend it. Yeah, you're supposed to protect and defend the culture, the country, the civilization, the city, the society, the whatever. You're supposed to protect and right? Have they done that? They have not. Do people morally, I'm not talking legally, just morally, right? Do people who have driven the young into $1 million of debt just by being born, do those people, can it be morally easily justified that they get massive pensions and healthcare? I'm just curious what you guys think. I'm just opening up this question. Right. You know who the most aggressive old men and women? It's a bit of an open-ended question. No, but they don't understand fiat money. Bullshit. Bullshit. Don't give anyone ignorance an excuse. They're voting on government money. They have to understand government money. It's not that hard to figure out. You can, particularly internet and all, right? You can figure this stuff out. Easy peasy. Now, don't give anyone the excuse of ignorance, please. Because otherwise everyone will claim it. And you can't disprove or prove it. You don't give anyone the excuse of ignorance. I mean, this is when I was in my early 20s, a friend of mine, you know, studied hard for a test, was ready to take it, genuinely forgot or wrote down the wrong day of the test or the wrong time or something like that. And what happened? He genuinely forgot. What happened? Yeah, they failed him. Yep. When you were a kid, if you forgot there was a spelling test, did they just let you not take it? When you were a kid, right? Did they just say, oh, okay, that's fine. You can just take the test another time, maybe. Right. I forgot armed robbery was illegal, right? Ignorance of the law is no excuse. I mean, did you did hear this, right? When you were a kid? And this is a legal standard. Ignorance of the law is no excuse, even if the law is like 500 volumes of dense text, right? Ignorance of the law is no excuse. Isn't that what you write? So the standard that the boomers imposed on everyone else was you don't get to say, I didn't know. You don't get to say, I forgot. Right? So, no, you don't. Don't judge people. You 90% of what you want to achieve in the world is manifest simply by judging people by their own standards. You don't have to impose some external standard, right? Right? You vote on government spending. Therefore, you have to know what government spending is, right? I mean, if your friend begs you to borrow your car, right? Oh, I got to borrow your car. I got a hot date, right? And you got a stick shift or whatever, right? And your friend then borrows your car and crashes it because he can't work stick, right? And you say, oh, I told you it was stick. And he's like, I didn't know how to drive it. It's like, oh, it's okay. It's fine then because you didn't know how to drive it. I mean, come on, people. Would you accept any excuse like that from anyone in the known universe? God, what is with this, like, oh, well, they said they didn't know, man. I didn't know. Who knew? Really, they'd never heard of the government. They'd never heard of the national debt. Never. They'd never heard of unfunded liabilities. They'd never, ever heard that the government wasn't paying all of its bills. Never. I mean, come on, right? I mean, that's willful ignorance. And then everybody's, oh, I didn't know. But you can't ever say that, right? Ignorance of the law can't be an excuse because then everyone would say, I didn't know. Oh, I didn't know. Therefore, I'm not responsible. If you had a son, would you have named him Stefan? No. No, I don't think so. No, the most aggressive parents are the parents who treat their children badly, and then when they get old, they need those children's time, attention, resources, and money. Right? Those are the most aggressive parents. Some Christians distinguish between vincible ignorance and invincible ignorance. You're responsible for the ignorance you could have overcome. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, it's a wild thing that the people, the exact same people who forced us to fail if we forgot something, and sometimes people would even be, they'd lose a year of their life. They would be held back a year in a grade. Jeez. And did you ever have this moment when you were a kid? Maybe it's more than a moment. Sure was more than a moment for me. I've had this moment where, you know, I my mom was involved in some legal crap and she was in my room. We had this really loud electric typewriter and she didn't want to move the typewriter for reasons I can't possibly understand. And I had a math test and my mom was typing with this really loud electric typewriter, smoking like a chimney in the room that I was sleeping in. I barely got any sleep, of course, right? And I couldn't say, take this typewriter out of the room because, right, she was violent. So I go in bleary-eyed, exhausted, and you see all these kids, you know, they're well-fed. They had a good night's sleep. They don't have to work all the time. And you failed relative to them. You ever have this situation where you just look and you say, I am crippled for things utterly beyond my control. I can't do homework because my house is too violent and chaotic. At one point in my mid-teens, I was working three jobs because my mom had stopped working, right? And I was judged while experiencing some fairly significant malnutrition or undernutrition for sure. In like sleeplessness. Some fair anxiety as far as whether we'd get these eviction notices from time to time. And I would go in and the teachers were like, all of them were like, well, if effort matched ability, you'd be an A+. I don't know why don't you work? Why don't you do your homework? Why? Of course, none of them ever asked me about my home life. Of course not, right? Because they want to rag at me, right? To what do you attribute your ability to overcome and succeed? Because fuck them, right? Because fuck them. Like, I mean, isn't that the basis of most people's success? You tell me I can't think, that's what I'm going to do. You tell me I can't reason, you tell me I can't talk about this topic, that's what I'm going to do. This is the health of anger, right? It's the health of anger. So these same people who marked me down for exhaustion and hunger that was not my fault. I had to wear the wristband of shame when I was in England in school, like after boarding school. I was boarding school 6 to 8, and then 8 to 11 I was in government schools. And then 11 plus in government schools in Canada. And I had to wear the bracelet of shame, which was you would have to bring in, I think it was about 20 pence, about 50 cents probably back in the day, be about $5 now, I suppose. But I'd have to bring in 20 pence for my school lunch because my mom was never organized enough to make me lunch. And so I had to go and get a plate full of mushy peas and some mystery meat from the school. Now, if you didn't have the 20 pence, they gave you the wristband of shame, which is a big, bright rubber wristband you had to wear to show that you couldn't afford your lunch, and then they would feed you, right? And I would gorge, right, because I would try and get as much as possible because I didn't know when decent food was going to be around again. Now, I don't hate that that happened. Honestly, I mean, I know this sounds kind of odd, and I'm not trying to do a pity play here. I'm just, thank you. I appreciate your sympathy. You had little pink tickets. Oh, and somebody said my parents would watch TV with the volume all the way up while chain smoking. Yeah, for sure. It's a form of sleep deprivation. It's a form of torturing the children, right? I thought it was kind of an accident. Like my mom was just so selfish, she'd type in my room. No. It's a form of aggression, right? She really didn't like being a mother. And so she didn't like her kids, and it was a form of aggression, right? You limit my dating options? Fine. You don't get to sleep. Right? I understand that. So I don't, you know, being held to a high standard or being held to an implacable standard with no excuses, it's not the end of the world. Honestly, I mean, if I had been given all of this goopy sympathy and sentimentality, I probably wouldn't have ended up, I think, relatively tough, right? I wouldn't have ended up relatively tough. So I don't hate that it happened. I mean, at the time it was tough, but that's fine. A lot of things at the time are tough that you see the benefit of later, right? I mean, I didn't like boarding school in particular, but at least it kept me away from hyper female goopiness because it was, you know, all boys. And we only had one female teacher, the piano teacher, and everybody else was male. The headmaster was male, and teachers were all male. So there was, you know, something there that was a little bit less of the estrogen whirlpool to the void. So I don't hugely hate that it all happened. So now I'm past the difficulty. I'm to the benefit side, right? What I have bottomless contempt for, to be perfectly frank with you, my friends, what I have bottomless contempt for is the exact same generation that refused to give me a break even when I deserve it, now claims to be ignorant and victim and they didn't know and blah, blah, blah. When, of course, when I said I didn't know, even if I genuinely didn't know something, it's like, too bad you fail. Too bad, kid, you're 8 years old. You forgot the test, you fail. Okay, so that's the rule. That's the rule. Ignorance is no excuse for an 8-year-old, but somehow it's supposed to be an excuse for a 70-year-old. Oh, come on. Like, nobody can be serious about this stuff, right? Nobody can be even remotely. Like, if they'd said to me, oh, okay, I guess it's fine, you know, you didn't get much sleep, and that's okay. And look, I mean, you forgot the test, so we'll just give you a makeover, you know, whenever you want, that's totally fine. And, you know, maybe you can go to the nurse's office and nap because you look really tired. And okay, maybe that would have been better for me in some ways, maybe that would have been worse for me. Okay, then at least you could say that they gave sympathy for ignorance to an 8-year-old. But they didn't give me any excuses or you any excuses when you were 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 15, whatever, right? I mean, what was I? It's the COVID thing. What was I always told as a kid? Well, he was doing it. Well, if he was jumping off the CN Tower, would you jump off the CN Tower? You think for yourself. Don't just do it because everyone else is doing it. Now line up for the shots, right? There's little conversation in society about female cruelty towards children. Actually, there's a lot. It's just not direct. It's all indirect, right? The conversation in society about female cruelty towards children is to do with MGTOW. It's to do with a lack of ambition on the part of men because they don't want to serve women in that way. They want to serve, feel enslaved to women in that way. Suicide is another conversation about female cruelty towards children. And there's a whole bunch of, in the arts, it shows up indirectly. You know, like in the movies, it used to be that women were protected, right? Women were protected. Now, because they've made women super tough in every show and movie known to man, women are getting beaten up in front or engaged in physical fights and sometimes getting beaten up. Well, always getting beaten up, often winning. But why is it that everyone wants to see women getting beaten up in movies? Whereas before that would have been just appalling. Well, because there's a lot of anger towards women. So. Did you avoid internalizing these abuses to a certain extent so that they wouldn't paralyze you? I mean, I think I got the FU pretty early on. I mean, my friends and I, we would laugh at our teachers. Like, they were just so ridiculous. They're such ridiculous people. I mean, teachers, my God, as a government school teachers as a whole. I mean, it's just, oh my God, we all saw that they were just like these vainglorious, half idiotic adult children in diapers. Like they just were, you know, sensitive and kind of reactive and emotional, and not just the girls, but the boys as well, the males as well, the quote males. I mean, you know, everyone kind of got, like, we're forced to be here. We don't want to be here. You don't have to serve us. You're just here for your pension. And, you know, like, we never got the sense, like, we never met this mythical teachers, you know, like the Dangerous Minds teachers, the Dead Poet Society teachers and all of them. We never met any. Did you have any of those teachers? Did you have any of those, like, really inspiring teachers that, boy, I just wake up and I can't wait to get to this class because she's really opening up my mind, or he's really opening up my mind about something, blah, blah, blah. Like, they're all just a bunch of toddlers in cardigans, aren't they? I mean, this was my experience. Maybe it sort of changed. Your physics teacher was amazing. That's good. That's good. I remember I had a physics teacher. We had one guy. There's usually one guy in every class who, like, certainly in every grade, who's like super muscular, and he had a nice haircut or whatever. And he walked in front of the physics teacher's desk, and the girls were like, "He's got a nice haircut." And the physics teacher said, "Oh, thank you." You know, that kind of stuff, right? A little funny, but. Let's see here. Let me get to your comments. Oof, says DJ. I had the table set aside for school-funded lunch. It was positioned next to our queue of students. I remember one girl asking, why do they get their food served first? She responded, because they're poor. We were usually 4 to 5 at a table. I was a teenager at the time. It was so embarrassing. I didn't want to eat that dinner not long after. Rather starve. Yeah. Somebody says, my mom would cuddle me and give me excuses when I was a kid, which would infuriate my dad and cause him to attack me. So one of the biggest ways you can produce a criminal is to excuse everything he does, right? So, I mean, the woman's anger against society manifests in her coddling of her son in particular, because that will often produce aggression, violence. My father denied smoking causes health problems until my tutor got emphysema. Then when he got liver failure, he quit cold turkey. Blamed me for his addiction because the kids stress him out. Then recently, after being diagnosed with liver failure, quit cigarettes cold turkey with no problem. Well, that's because you're not stressing him out. Right. Just kidding, of course. Nothing has changed about teachers in that regard. Yeah, everyone put your heads down while staff is talking. How do you like it? I was a teacher but kept getting in trouble for truth-bombing kids. Had to quit. Yeah, you can't tell the truth as a teacher. Hands down, my best female teacher would bend over on a platform and had a nice rack. So you got whatever subject she was teaching plus phys ed, health. Somebody says, I had some great teachers, a few good ones in public school. Most were private. Piano music teachers were far more inspiring than public school teachers. Yeah. Look, I mean, school certainly wasn't designed for someone like me. I mean, I used to get more mad at the incompatibility, but school was not designed for someone like me. I mean, this is like, just not, not the way, not the way things should be. I mean, I'm too off the bell curve for things to accommodate. It's like you can't build your society for people who are 7 feet tall, right? I mean, they're just going to have to duck. Sorry. Let me just get back to your questions. Have I left anything behind? Have I left anything behind? Oh, yeah, we did the toxic children, about to have children. We did that one. What would be an appropriate age to introduce children to video games and electronics devices? My intuition says 8 to 10 years old and never alone. For cell phones, I was thinking a basic dumb phone to call home for when they hang out with their peer group. I've seen unparented kids as young as 2 raised by tablets and video games, and that saddens me. So, yeah, I mean... I'm just pushing the call in if the guy can accommodate it, because I wanted to just sort of finish up some thoughts here. Yeah, have you seen the video of, I think it's a Chinese kid who's sleeping but scrolling, like he's dreaming, he's got a cell phone, although I've never, and somebody pointed this out, have you ever dreamt about a tablet or a cell phone? I never have. So when should you, like, whatever you're involved with them, right? I mean, my daughter and I, we played a bunch of video games, and she was into Dragon Veil for a while, and I would, you know, when she went to bed, I'd pick up, click up all her gold and all of that, and she was very excited about it because it was mathematical probability and breeding and growth and all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you just hang out with them and do it as a whole. I mean, obviously, you know, they don't go on, you know, like various social media platforms that are pushing a whole bunch of agendas from some pretty hostile actors. That's not what should be going at all. So when I dream of tech, the screen shows undecipherable symbols. Oh, that's because tech is after the Matrix, right? What are your thoughts on the actress/writer strike? I mean, the more Hollywood fights, the happier I am as a whole. So yeah, go for it. Hollywood had a chance, the media as a whole had a chance to try and absorb, I talked about this many years ago, they had a chance to try and absorb alternative media, social media, like the people like myself who were skilled at presenting information outside of the regular. So, you know, TV should have been hiring from that, movies should have been trying to get people, and there's a little bit of that, but they didn't, right? What did they do as a whole, right? What did the media, mainstream media do as a whole? Well, they called everyone racist and got people banned. Right, because they can't compete. They Tonya Harding'd people, if you understand that reference. So, yeah, I mean, whatever negative stuff happens to people who refuse to roll with the times and refuse to fade away gracefully, but simply attacked innovators and creators, like whatever happens to them that's bad, I'm like, I'm going to lose precisely zero sleep about it. Let's see here. There was a good question back up here about the Count of Monte Cristo. I have read the Count of Monte Cristo. I've seen a couple of video. So yeah, it's a big revenge story. Revenge in general is desperation, right? Now, I don't mind a little bit of revenge here and there. And sometimes I've waited years for revenge. You know, the old revenge is a dish best served cold and so on. I think revenge is fine. It can be emotionally satisfying. It can be punitive. It can be, you know, it can maybe add a little bit to the virtue of the world because of some consequences and so on. So yeah, I think I don't have any particular issue with revenge. I wouldn't sacrifice a lot of happiness. So what I do is I never forget a slight. I don't brood on them, but I never forget them, right? I never forget them. And it's like what they used to call a TSR, a Terminate and Stay Resident program. You'd load it into the upper memory of the 640K to 1024K in DOS. You'd high load it, and it would sort of sit there and notify a few things and sort of act in the background. So when somebody wrongs me, I notice, and it's not something that I think about a lot, but it's funny because my brain then just, it's like got this resident program where it's like, you can live like the person never harmed you, but if there's an opportunity to get some revenge, then that pops into my head. It just sinks down, and then it can just pop into my head, and I have no problem doing it. It's a desperation because revenge is a way of punishing people for their wrongdoing outside of the legal system. Revenge is what happens when you're playing whack-a-mole because children are being raised violently. Because children are being raised violently, then what happens is they end up doing bad things, which then generates the need for revenge. And so revenge will take away from your capacity to promote peaceful parenting. So if you get too vengeful, and again, you know, I don't have any particular issue if you, the Count spent a decade plotting his revenge. So did he give up too much of himself to get his revenge then? Should he have just moved on with his life? That's very hard to do when you have been wronged. I've been wronged and I'm moving on with my life, aren't I? I don't think I've been swallowed up by bitterness and rage or anything like that. I don't feel that way. So, and if I don't feel that way, then it's not, right? You can't have some sort of magical, well, no, you're still angry. You don't feel it and it doesn't show up anywhere. So, so plotting that level of revenge, there is some truth. There's a cliche, the best revenge is a better life. You know, am I going to go and take vengeance on people who did me wrong when I was younger or whatever? It's like, and have a great life. And I don't see how I could benefit from, like, I would, if I was plotting revenge all the time, I would be, this show would be worse. I would convince fewer people to peacefully parent. I would, it would color just about everything I did, my books, my articles, my presentations, my live streams, my call-in shows. And I would not be as good a father to my daughter, right? And that's my yardstick, right? That's what I guide myself by. Is it good for my parenting? And that's my fundamental thing, right? Is it good for my parenting? That's it. The big revenge stories are all about, you better not be bad because someone's going to spend a year plotting your downfall. And it's a way of, it's a kind of saying, well, hell can manifest in revenge in your life during the day as you live. Right, revenge, people will get, and it's a way of trying to scare people into being good, but you generally can't scare people into being good. You can hopefully inspire them or motivate them or make a good case or an argument, but you can't. People who've wronged me in the past, you know, I mean, there were a lot of people who didn't care that I was deplatformed, and I won't track their platform status or whether they're doing well or whether they're doing badly. I mean, I wouldn't fight for them to, like, it's just, you know, that's the deal, right? You treat people the best you can the first time you meet them. And after that, you treat them as they treat you. Right. I mean, the people who didn't follow me to the new platform, well, I think they missed out on some fairly important information to put it mildly. All right, how do you detach from your family's shame? For example, if a sibling or parent does something stupid and you feel secondhand embarrassment and a need to fix the situation, of course such reaction was instilled in childhood. Do you have such reaction to your mother's shameful behavior as you didn't take it personally? I don't know what that means. I remember being maybe 14 years old and I got a call from the mall security because my mother had had some kind of freak out at the mall and then had collapsed, and I had to go to her, and I think she hadn't had enough money to pay for something and just panicked and freaked out and started screaming at people and so on. This is, of course, when she was really deteriorating. And so, yeah, I was obviously not particularly happy to go to the mall and literally pick up my mother and bring her home. It was not super fun in any way, shape, or form. But I don't feel that... I don't think I ever felt that I was lesser because of that. Somebody just said, if you seek revenge, you should dig two graves. That's nonsense. Of course you can take revenge, and it can be very elegant, and it can be very positive, and it can actually be helpful. Right? So you understand that people who say never take revenge, they don't want blowback from their evil deeds. I guarantee you, whoever came with that bloody well deserved some revenge. And so he's trying to sit down and say, don't, oh, no, don't do revenge, man. That way he can keep exploiting people and then can say, well, don't seek revenge. No, no, the origin of that stuff is definitely bad people trying to convince you out of giving them any blowback. Right? An eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind. Yeah, how's that been working out? So, yeah, I don't. So, no, I never felt like I was bad. I mean, I certainly felt some embarrassment. I felt some embarrassment with regards to my mother's behavior, but I never felt that I was shameful because I wasn't doing it. I didn't want her to do it. And I had done, even from being a kid, I had tried to do the right thing with regards to my mom. I tried to give her some better advice, you know, even in my awkward kid way. I tried to give her books on self-knowledge. I tried to give her philosophy. I really tried to help her. I really, really tried to help her. And she wouldn't accept the help. In fact, she attacked me for trying to help her because that was trying to give her some responsibility, right? And of course, I, you know, with regards to my mother, and I'm sure this is the case for lots of people, obviously, I've done wrong things in my life. I've done some bad things in my life. But I don't have a bad conscience. Because I've really confronted my darker side. I've tried to promote virtue in the world and taken a lot of body blows and reputational blows for it. And it's fine. That's a good trait. But I don't have a bad conscience. So if you don't have a bad conscience, you cannot understand people who do have a bad conscience. Like I've never harmed a child. You know, I was really nice to the kids. Even when I got my daycare job when I was like 15, I had to negotiate with my school to let me out 15 minutes early so I could get there on time. And I was always nice and positive to the kids. The kids, I can't remember somehow, they got my phone number. They used to call me up for chats. And yeah, it was nice, you know. So the kids all loved me and we had great relationships. And so if you have a good conscience, which is, you know, not perfect, whatever that means, right? If you have a good conscience, you cannot understand people who have a really bad conscience. See, for me, it was like, yeah, okay, I did some not great things when I was a kid. You know, again, nothing terrible, but, you know, it was not great. And so when virtue came along, I was like, okay, yeah, I shouldn't do these bad things. I should do the right thing. I should do a better thing. But, you know, the things that I had done that were wrong, you know, a little shoplifting or whatever, right? Then it took some quarters from my mom's purse for video games, whatever, right? I was at some dance and I was half dating some girl and I kissed another girl. Like, you know, just, I mean, not great stuff, but not like terrible stuff. And so when virtue came along, it didn't threaten me fundamentally. It was like, thank gosh, right? I mean, here's what you need to understand. If you have evil people in your life goes very badly, right? If you have evil people in your life, this is something that one of my business partners said to me when I was in my late 20s. He said, if you have difficult people in your life is difficult. It's just the way it is. So I want you to think of something. Let's take a typical example. You get kidnapped and held for ransom. And after 2 days in a cabin in the middle of nowhere with your kidnappers, you hear sirens, right? How do you feel? Thank goodness the police are coming, right? They're going to arrest these guys. I'm going to be free. Thank goodness they found me, right? So your emotion when the law arrives is one of deep gratitude and positivity, right? How do your kidnappers feel when the sirens get closer and closer and closer? They panic and become violent. Now, you're actually in a situation of grave danger, but you're probably going to get killed anyway. So it's your really journey chance. So you feel some anxiety, but you're like, whew, sirens, thank God. Woo, woo. Man, I'm so happy they found me. Whereas, of course, your kidnappers, knowing that they're going to go to jail for 20 years, are very unhappy, right? Of course, yeah. Concentration camp, the gays, the Jews, right? They are hugely relieved when the Allies show up and the Nazis are not, right? So this analogy is very important. It's very important because I'll tell you why. Philosophy is the siren. Philosophy is the law. Philosophy is the peace officers. Philosophy is the virtue. It is the escape. Because philosophy is coming along to saying, you have the capacity for good and you're evil. So being kidnapped in a way, if you have abusive parents, it's kind of like kidnapping because you're not there by choice, right? And you can't get away. So when philosophy shows up, when Lady Philosophy in her hobnailed boots kicks in the rotting door of your historical prisons, what happens? You're like, oh, thank God. Thank reason. Thank virtue. Philosophy is here. Freedom, right? And what do the evil people feel? You follow? You feel me? What do the evil people feel? Horror. They're appalled. They're frightened. They're angry. They're enraged. They're manipulative, right? Because she's there to save you and damn them. Because the crimes they've committed are beyond redemption. And when people hit that tipping point where the crimes they've committed are beyond redemption. Yeah, I stole a couple of things when I was in my early teens. I had no respect for society's rules. But I've now spent 40 years promoting property rights. So I feel that that is relatively okay. I was a little bit of a date around guy. Now I promote monogamy and right marriage and when the law shows up, philosophy is the moral law, the police are the physical law. When the law shows up, the criminals turn on you. Or they run, but family doesn't run, right? So they turn on you. Evil people fake outrage and denial when caught. Yeah, for sure. Of course, yeah, of course. So there's a tipping point. When you can't right the wrongs you've done, I've righted the wrongs I've done. When you can't right the wrongs you've done, you double down on immorality, right? Because you can't undo it. So you double down. If you can't run, you turn and fight. So it's really, really important to understand this. When the moral law kicked in my door, I was relieved. My rescue had arrived. And I could not understand why everybody else was so angry that the police had come. Because it comes in a flood, right? It's like a SWAT team. They're coming in through the windows and the chimneys, right? The moral law had come. And this white wedding, glorious, ferocious lady. The Cupids from the future, from my novel, The Future. She had come with her wings and her sword and her bright blue flaming eyes. She just came in. And I ran to her. I threw myself at her feet. I was so grateful. I chained myself to her because where she was grace and safety and beauty and virtue. I ran to her, man. Other people locked and loaded and opened fire. Come on, we've all been there, haven't we? What is an angel to you is a devil to them, and what is a devil to them is an angel to you. And what is a devil to you is an angel to them, right? You are saved. The glowing, folding white wings curl around you and lift you out of hell. You are saved. and they just open fire. Do they care if they hit you? Nope. They've seen their enemy. They've seen the Gabriel, the Galadriel. They've seen their enemy. They know. And what you do, of course, is you say to the angel, you say to the goddess, you say to the moral law, please, 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 please turn around. Please go and save them. Please turn around. Please, I'm begging you, turn around, save them. They know not what they do. Use your wings to block the bullets. Do whatever you have to do. Please turn around and save them. And what does the moral law say in return? What does the moral law say as she lifts you out of hell, flying somehow though her white wings are folded around your broken heart? What does the moral law say when you beg her to return and save those you grew up with? She says, without anger, but with deep knowledge, and it tears you in two, tore me in two. She says, if I turn around, we both die. That when you want to return, it's not your desire, it's their desire, so they can kill you. That's why you want to turn around. It's not because of me. It's not because of virtue. It's not because of the moral law. It's not because of salvation or safety. You want to turn around so they get a better fucking shot at you and me. Lot's wife, yeah. You're right, Tim. You can't go back. You can only go down in flames into hell. The desire to save the damned is so that the damned can curse you. The desire to turn back is the suicidal murder impulse that's implanted in you should you get away. Because the demons among us, the devils among us, the evil among us, always want to kill the witness, don't they? Oh, the angel who rescued this man, this woman. Bring him back to us. You see, you came because you sniffed his hope in the cottage, in the dungeon. You sniffed his hope and you walked through walls to gather him up and capture him. And the scent, the silver scent of that hope, you slithered through the cracks to lift him out because of his hope. His hope drew you to him to save him. He hoped so much that you manifested, you found him. That was a smoke signal that drew you across the plains, across the deserts, his hope. Now, his hope for virtue summoned you. You corrosive goddess of philosophy, his hope summoned you. Now, let's use his hope, not for salvation, his own, not for his own salvation. Let's use his hope to bring him back. Hey man, you saved yourself. I bet you can save me too. And your kindness becomes your crosshairs. You know, like this used to be, I don't know if it's still a thing now, but it's like, oh, someone's car's broken down, it's a bad rainstorm, and you stop to help them, and they kidnap you, they rob you. Everybody has to summon the goddess with their own hope. You cannot transfer that. You cannot. You can transfer the beauty of the goddess. You can transfer the glory of virtue. You can transfer the integrity and nobility of integrity. you can show people how beautiful the goddess is, but you cannot bring the goddess to them. Then they will just lure you in to strike. The goddess can only follow the scent of each soul's hope. It's the only thing she can track by. It's the only thing she can track by. She only scents, she does not see. The goddess can only follow the silver trail of hope to rescue and rescue and rescue. You cannot order the goddess. You cannot bring the goddess. She does not take your commandments. She is not something you fly like an airplane. She does not follow your will. The only thing she follows, the only thing that draws her, is hope. If you can inspire hope in people, a hope for something better, a hope for virtue, hope for escape, hope for joy, hope for love, hope for virtue. If you can inspire that hope in them, she sees it. Like a volcano on the horizon, she sees it. And she will go, and she will offer salvation. But you cannot push her, you cannot control her, you can't make her do anything. Because the people became evil by thinking the virtue was something they could control. If you can't surrender to it, you can't achieve it. You can provoke hope in others. Hopefully, you can stimulate hope in others. You can be an example of hope to others. And if they genuinely hope and wish to escape the dungeon, she will kick in the door. And she will take them through the roof. She will take them up and out. But no man alive can make her go where there is no hope. Because she will not insult those who hope by saving those who condemn. I mean, I, of course, desperately wished that I could save the others, because, you know, I thought I was surrounded by prisoners, you know, I in the cell, right? I thought I was surrounded by prisoners. I could hear the voices. I could see them at times. And I thought, I can't leave the other prisoners behind. If I've got a way out, I have to get them out. But what the goddess said to me was really chilling. What the goddess said to me was, they're not prisoners. They imitate being prisoners. They sound like prisoners. They'll try and get you to confide in them like fellow prisoners, but they're not prisoners. They were never your prisoners. I can save prisoners who know they're prisoners. I can save prisoners who hope to get out. I can save prisoners who are desperate to get out, because I can scent that hope like a silver thread across the sky. And nothing will stop me when I'm on the track of that scent. Nothing. So what were they when she told me? Oh, all these people around me when I'm in prison, all these people around me. I've got to save them. What were they? What did she tell me they were? First she asked me a question. She said, did you see any jailers? Just out of curiosity, in your cell, those decades, did you see any jailers? And I said, no. I didn't see any jailers. And she said, yeah, you did. You just thought they were prisoners. You can break a prisoner out of jail. You can't break a jailer out of jail. Because he's there for the prisoners. The people you thought were your fellow prisoners were in fact your jailers. The people who you thought were your allies But you're guards. That's why they can't come. You can't ask me to rescue you from the people I'm rescuing you from. You can't ask me to rescue the people that I'm rescuing you from. You follow? I'm rescuing you from the guards, and you want me to turn back and save the guards? Are you crazy? If you save the guards, you're back in prison. Then I'm just carrying your cell, not you, out of the cell. I'm carrying the cell, the guards, the prison. We just put it somewhere else. You're right back where you fucking started. You can't get out of prison if everyone in the prison comes with you, because you get the guards too. Radiate hope, show progress, show the way out. But don't go back for anyone. Here's what happens. The law, the moral law, the goddess, she followed you and broke you out because she could smell your hope. You go back to rescue the guards. You go back to rescue the oppressors. You go back to rescue the evil. You go back. What happens to your hope when you try to beg people to come out? What happens to your hope? It dies in your chest. It dies in your heart. And then she can't find you anymore. She can't get to where you are. She's going to go to somebody else with hope and rescue them. You go back to rescue the evil. Your hope dies. You can't be tracked. The moral law cannot find you, and you are there forever and fucking ever. Amen from hell. Hit me with a why if you follow. Don't turn back. Anybody who cares to break free will ask you how you did it, and you'll tell them. But don't circle back. Circling back is like going back to that crazy ex-girlfriend one more time. Oh, we had sex one more time. Oh, she got pregnant. She's not going to keep the kid. 20 years of baby jail. My life is ruined. Go back to help is go back to nothing. And they're asking you to return to a state of very early childhood when you could not have any hope, because salvation, adulthood, independence, freedom was too far away. They're asking you to return that far. Follow the goddess to the heaven we can inhabit. The people you leave behind, who are in fact the jailers most times, only want you to return so they can take your hope out of your heart like an Aztec child ritual and crush it in their fists. And then you are lost. And the moral law will never find you, and salvation will never return, and you will be down there, and you will join them, and you will spend the rest of your life trying to forget that short burst of glorious God-given freedom that you had from the rescue of the goddess of the moral law. You will spend the rest of your life pretending that never happened. It was a weird dream. It was a cult. It was immoral. I went crazy. You'll kill your hope. You can't be tracked. You live and die there, in the pit. I'm going to turn back. They just want another shot at you. All right. I'm afraid I'm going to have to stop here because I have pushed upon the kindness of the guy with the call-in show for too long. So I will move on to that. I hope that this story helps you. If you appreciate my storytelling abilities and my analogy abilities, then I hope that you will check out my novels. You can go to almostnovel.com. You can go to justpournovel.com. You can go to fdrurl.com/TGOA for my novels. And of course, you can go to the future and the present. You can find those at freedomain.locals.com. We're actually going to do a new book page this weekend. The glorious James has agreed, and I appreciate that enormously. So we're getting a new book page this weekend, so all my books will be way easier to find because having all these mouthfuls of letters is not super helpful. If you find this helpful, if you could tip me, I would, of course, really appreciate that. I can't even tell you how much brain sweat and emotions I expend in these stories and monologues. So if you find this helpful, if you could help me out, I would appreciate a tip, of course. I know you're donors here, but if you are listening to this later, freedomain.com/donate. I would really, really, really appreciate that. So have yourselves a wonderful afternoon. I'm not going to do a show tonight, I'm afraid. I have something else. So I will try and talk with you guys on the weekend. I really, really appreciate you being here for this conversation. And I appreciate more than I can say the honor and distinct privilege of talking to the world in this way through your support. freedomain.com/donate. Take care, everyone. Love you guys. Talk to you soon.